Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being, to be true to yourself and be honest with others. So today we have a guest. Our guest today is Ilana Rontea, and Ilana is a true entrepreneur. I love reading all the stuff that she sent me. She's a speaker, she's a writer, and she has blogs, and she's a life mentor. And overall goal is to facilitate women's change and growth in their lives. And so she's also passionate about helping women and who are on the path of self-growth and development by assisting them in their journey. She's also an admin for the group on Facebook that is called Empowered Extrovert Witnesses, Empowered Mind. And I've also made some interviews with some other admins there. So if you like, you can watch those shows. And I love that group, by the way, because that group, as it says, is empowered and empowering you to be the greatest person that you can be in this life. Because as we know, being human is super. And so she also has her company, which is called Phoenix on the Rise, where she works with women who are going through transitional in their lives and help them to thrive and not only just to survive. And so you can find all her work at Phoenix on the Rise, as well on Facebook, YouTube, and on her website, phoenixontherise.com, which I'll post on the show notes. So thank you, Ilana, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Zen, for having me. It's a pleasure. I look forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. I often, people like you who are doing something greater in life instead of just, you know, 9 to 5, which is fine, but people who are taking their human power to do something great in life and also giving back to the community, I love to speak into all my guests, but especially people like you. It's inspiring to me, and it's basically boosting me up too because talking to you. So I love that.
Thank you.
So please tell us about who you are and what brings you joy.
So I love helping others. This is something that I've done my entire life since I was young. Making a difference in people's lives has been something that has been at the core for a very long time. I think I started when I was in my teens. Just naturally, I was that person that everybody came to for advice. And so it started way back then. And when I talk to people and I see how my words have impacted them positively and how the words stay with them for a long time. And I've had people say to me, you said something to me last year and it stayed with me. And now I've gone and done this because of it. I think, wow, that is so amazing. Right. So that's what brings me joy, as well as nature. I absolutely love being in nature and traveling. Traveling is like my number one passion.
Well, we have similarities in the people kind of a thing. If I knew we would talk about this, I would pull up exactly what happened. Someone I met maybe 2 years ago prior to COVID texted me, and I didn't know who they were. And I usually make a joke when people I don't know text me because it's awkward. Because kind of like saying, yeah, who is this? It's too awkward. So I'll make like a joke saying, is this the RS or something like that? Yeah. And then apparently she went through a gender transition or a sex transition. And then she was saying how nice I was to her. And I have no idea who that person was and anything. And but she remembers to message me to tell me I was nice to her two years ago.
That's very cool. In
some interaction. Yeah. And
so it that helps you don't recall.
Yeah, I'm like, oh damn. So these scenarios remind me to always be kind. Just like you probably seen that meme. I don't remember the whole thing, but it says, think before you speak. Is it thoughtful? Is it inspiring? Is it nice? Is it kind? I'm not spelling the thinking word but something like that. Is it kind? Is it inspiring? So I do my best before I speak to you, go through the list. And if it's not inspiring, nice.
Mentally,
or
right?
Yeah, yeah. So don't say it. You know, like that quote that says, I don't know if the culture you're in is have the same quote where it says, when your mom usually says, if it's not nice, don't say it, keep it to yourself, kind of.
Right,
like
right.
So I totally love that. I can resonate with that. So how can the women you work with or anybody that you would work with or talk to get rid of shame, guilt, and judgment for themselves? I ask that question because that's basically the meat of this podcast, because I had in around August 2020, I had some shame, guilt, fear, and judgment about myself. And I had, as most of us, because of the world shut down, we had to see with ourselves. And as my guru says, Sadhguru says, if you're alone and you are basically in shmata, like my friend likes to say, then you are in bad company. So basically, most of us were alone, and I was in shmata, and I was like, whoa, there are some things I need to fix. I need to fix my shame, guilt, fear, and judgments. So how can someone get rid of those things, and how do you assist them?
Well, first of all, there's a whole awareness piece. A lot of people are not aware of the negative beliefs they hold about themselves. And a lot of those are programming that we have received as we grow up. And it's also messaging we get from other sources, not just our families or friends or teachers, but also from the media, from the marketing, from things like churches. All those things, they are, especially I would say religion, has a lot to do with this shame and guilt and judgment. You know, you're born a sinner, you die a sinner, blah, blah, blah. And so a lot of people feel not worthy. They feel like nothing they do is good enough. They're always going to fail. Life is crap. You know, all of these horrible thoughts that they're not even aware are there. So becoming aware of your thinking patterns is the first thing. Yeah. And then stepping back and realizing that, well, that's not necessarily my thinking. This is something that has kind of imprinted on me. And now I need to look at it and say, that's not me. That's somebody else's judgment. And I had to do that myself when I was young, because my mother was very powerful, a very un-Jehovah's Witness kind of person. She was a judge and a lawyer. So a very powerful woman. And she was, as a judge, she was very judgmental about everything. And so, you know, she would give me advice. Like, I remember one time she said to me, don't ever trust women because they will always betray you. And that's a pretty big statement to make. Like don't judge, trust 50% of the population. And I remember I was quite young and thinking, there's something wrong with that. I don't agree with that. So it's realizing that you've heard these things. And a lot of people would just absorb this and go, oh, okay, so that's the way it is. So it's having that. So what I do is I help women step back from those pronouncements, from those beliefs and ideas, list them, and then we start to disassemble them and say, where is this coming from? And then I have them focus on their strengths and the positive qualities that each one of us has. Because we tend to forget those. You know, we forget the positives because we're so focused on the negatives. And we all do this. We are all trained to do this. So there are certain exercises that we do. There are certain tools that I use. And this is part of the training I also do, which you and I talked about. So it's all about stepping back from those negative things and realizing they don't need to define you. You are not defined by those things. And then you create something that is self-empowering, beautiful self-talk that is helping you along in your life as opposed to stumbling you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's wonderful. And everything you've been saying, I tend to do a lot of self-work. And number one thing is self-awareness, definitely. And yeah, self-awareness, yeah, at least for me, and my step would be being mindful how I step forward.
Yes.
And being mindful at first was like a lot of, it felt tedious and felt like work, but it is work. And we need to work on it. It should be like,
absolutely.
We go 9 to 5 working for someone else's company, but then we go home and we don't work on ourselves. And so,
and this is a process, right? Because we are a work in progress. This is my belief, that we're not a finite thing. We're always growing and expanding and shifting and changing and transforming, because we're not just meant to remain rigid where we were when we were, you know, 15, right? It doesn't work like that. Life doesn't work like that. So having the ability to do that really is very empowering, as well as the self-talk. Like, if I do something good, I tell myself, wow, that was awesome. You did a really good job with that. I'm very proud of you.
Nice.
And now it's become habitual, right? As opposed to beating myself up if I do something wrong. If I do something wrong, I'm just human, right? We're all human. We all make mistakes, and that's okay. There's always lessons to be learned also out of the mistakes. Mm-hmm. So is it really a mistake, or is it just a learning experience, right? It's that perspective. It's always the perspective you have on what happens in your life.
So it's true in the sense where that crosses, when you change how you see life, basically life changes for you. So, you know, I'm never going to use that word mystic anymore. Thank you. Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Even when I've used it, I've thought of like, okay, so mystic that I met somebody or did this, but I still learn from it. But even the word mystic is negative and lack. It's like, oh, you're not seeing the perspective. Thank you for that. I learned something new today, and I'm excited for the rest.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So what was your childhood like growing up, or as a Jehovah's Witness, or did you grow up a Jehovah's Witness? I don't know your story.
Well, I was very lucky that the first 10 years of my life, I had a very free childhood. My parents were both intellectuals. My dad was an engineer. My mother was a lawyer and a judge. And there was lots of books in their house, in our house. And when I was able to read, I got to read everything. My parents never restricted me. So I already had a wide range of knowledge and understanding, even that young. And we had very interesting discussions. My parents never had the idea that children should be seen and not heard. It was only the three of us. I'm an only child. So we had these really wonderful discussions about the nature of the universe and the spirit and astral travel and, you know, all of these cool things. So I didn't become associated with this extremely restrictive religion until I was 10. So I had a huge basis for not being in that. It's much harder for people who are born into it and who have the indoctrination since birth. This is, you know, the template is much heavier to shift. So what happened after we became involved in it, all those interesting conversations stopped. And there was the dogma. There was the thing you needed to believe. And, you know, the Bible, and that was the only thing that mattered. And I remember thinking that I didn't feel comfortable with that. There was things I wasn't very comfortable with, because I still had memories of, you know, when I was free, you know, we could explore. And even as witnesses, my parents still didn't restrict me. So I read what I wanted. I was a very good student because I liked school. And so they never really bothered me as far as that. They were not extremely fanatical. And so I was very fortunate. Also, I had friends outside. I had friends inside and I had friends outside. And I think there was one time my mother tried to restrict me. And I was like, don't restrict my friends. As long as I'm not in with a bad crowd, I'm not into drugs, I'm not in trouble, please don't restrict my friends. And so that kind of stopped. And so I had a childhood that was much less restrictive than most witnesses.
Oh, wow.
And then I left when I was 21.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yes. I disassociated myself. I wrote the letter because I didn't want to be bothered and I was done with it.
Wow, that's great. Yeah.
Wow. Best decision I ever made.
Yeah, definitely. Because I know some people who are stay for 50 years and I cannot, that goes above my head. I just can't because which leads to the question of like, for me, I often wonder how much I know the product that I'm in is culture and where I'm growing up as and what's around me and what's being taught and everything. But at the same time, there are certain things I know that I often question or don't do. Even I would assimilate just to survive. And I know it's not part of me. So I often ask how much of this is me and how much of this is learned. And I've known I've often be the person who just asks questions as you
and mentioned. That's not good.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
yeah.
a witness, right? That's not good.
Yeah. And to survive, I would be, as you mentioned, as people see people like children are to be seen and not heard, or even not right. being seen, even as Jehovah's Witness, being in from a violent household, you're not seen. Don't say anything, don't make a peep, and don't be seen either. So, and so
don't
I
be, right? Myself. If you, no, don't be is the message.
Right.
Which is so exactly. disempowering. So mm-hmm.
disempowering.
Good for you. 19 is a very good age to go.
Yeah. Well, that happened because I was thinking small, and I'm glad I did speak to my counselor about it because she saw some clues when I was in school. I attempted suicide 3 times. And when that didn't happen, of course you pray to Jehovah and say, take your life away. I'd rather die now. And you wake up and that didn't happen. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to run away because I was really brain dumb or brainwashed as most kids were. Yeah. So I didn't know a lot of stuff. And then I think either one of their articles or in that book, Young People Ask or something, it talks about someone running away because I didn't know what that was. And I was just like, I'm going to run away too. And then I brought all my stuff with me. And the counselor was like, oh, this is different because why you go to school with all your baggage? And then she asked me and I said, oh, this is my toiletries, whatever. I'm running away. I'm going to live in the school courtyard or somewhere.
Oh my goodness.
And she's like, how about you do this? How about you work your butt off as much as possible, save your money, and then move out. And you don't have to do that extreme because as Jehovah's Witnesses, I don't know how about you or your where you were brought up, but I don't know if it's like me or something I learned. We're extreme people. It's either this or that. So I did the extreme of like wanting to kill myself or running away. And there are other options that I didn't think about. And then when she mentioned that, I had a new perspective. And also part of my personality is I love learning new things. So when someone says something, even when someone says something that I don't agree with as in about me or things that I believe in, I take it consideration because there's possibilities. Yeah.
There are always options. It's just, especially when we're young, we don't know, right? And yes, the witnesses teach a very black and white mentality. You're either this or you're that. And the truth is that there is no black and white. Everything is varying shades of gray. I don't know if it's quite 50, maybe it's more or less, but it's varying shades of gray and people's situations are different. Circumstances are different. You cannot judge everything on one standard. Mm-hmm. And that is the, that is the big thing that I don't agree with. And the dogma, I don't like dogma. I like to think for myself. And if I don't agree with something, I don't care if it's a rule. If I don't agree with it, I will have a very hard time obeying it. And I don't even like the word obedience. That bothers me.
Certainly. What made you leave the religion?
So it was basically two big things. Three big things. So I started university and I was doing a liberal arts degree. So I took really interesting courses like psychology and philosophy and mythology and, you know, things that really my brain was, and I started to see things very differently. And so I started to question a lot of things. So that was number one. Number two was the whole portrayal of God in the Bible, especially in the Old Testament, as the genocidal, angry, jealous, monstrous. And I was thinking, how can the creator of the universe, the creator of butterflies and flowers, destroy an entire people because they worship the golden calf or something ridiculous? Like, is he really that petty? And none of this made sense to me. It actually insulted me. I felt insulted. My intelligence was insulted. I thought, so that to me is nonsense. And the third reason I left was because freedom is my number one value. And this religion does not allow you freedom, any kind of freedom. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is not the life for me. You know, I was doing it for my parents. And I came to the realization at the age of 21 that you cannot live for your parents, especially about really, you know, things to do with your personal integrity and how you want to live your life. I knew it was not for me.
Yeah, one of my values, well, as you mentioned with the freedoms, my values is peace. If I enter a space that's not peaceful, but as St. Francis would say, and I love his prayer, he says, let me be an instrument of peace. So I do my best to be that peace in that space. Yeah. But when I'm in my space that's not doesn't have people or interactions, I make sure that I'm peaceful within myself as well. And so I feel like that matches with the freedom, because if I'm at peace and I'm free from all the world's noise or other people, yes, et cetera. And I do feel very bothered when people try to control, even in relationship, which is funny, talking about psychology. I also had interest in psychology, which I studied. And so it's funny because in relationships, I let people be so much. People would think I'm not invested in the relationship.
Right.
Because I'm not texting them, where are you? Or you said this. I don't hold people to promises. People say, I promise. And I said, it's okay. You can break it now. Like things like that.
Right.
Because as you mentioned, humans are to be evolved and flow and not rigid. And so since I believe in that, I let people be what I let myself be as well.
Yeah. That's very nice. Most people are not able to do that. So that's very evolved of you, Zen, actually. That's the truth. That's the truth. Very cool. Yeah.
And I do hold very strong to do unto others what you others done to you, or
I agree,
and things like that. And I don't see them as religion. I see it as guides that can work in your life if you choose to have it. Yeah.
Yes. I think the golden rule is probably the one lasting principle that really, if everybody lived like that, we wouldn't have any problems, would we?
Certainly. So,
because it covers everything.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. What's it called? I also read a lot about Lao Tzu and the Yoga Sutras and things like that. And a lot of these things were about oneself and not like, How do I control my wife kind of book and things like that. It's how do I control this entity?
Exactly.
And let others be.
And that's the choice we always have, is how we react, you know, our attitude. I don't know if you ever read Viktor Frankl's book.
Oh.
He was you know, his situation, having lived through, you know, the Nazi concentration camps.
Yes.
And that horror. And what came out of this was his logos therapy, which says that no one can ever take away from you the power, how you react to whatever happens to you. That is your one superpower. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even know about that. So that's a very important thing. Instead of trying to control others, it's how you control your own reactions.
Definitely. And you rise above it and you're powerful. Certainly. And a lot of employers don't like me because I'm not a contrary to, like, when I say that, people think I'm combative, and it's not even that. I just unbothered about, let's say, a shenanigan. If it's a shenanigan, I hold my space. And if I don't belong there, I just leave, kind of a person. I don't argue. I don't fight. Like, I'm not against, because those energies, I just don't need them. I can just flow in peace and freedom, total freedom. And if someone wants those values, they can be inspired. And if they don't, it's okay, because I'm not forceful. Yeah, certainly.
That's lovely.
Thank you. I do my best. So how did you come up with the work that you currently do?
Well, you know, women's issues have always been in the forefront of my mind, because I realized a long time ago that women are not given the same opportunities that men are. And the programming that women endure is really extremely pervasive. I mean, it goes back thousands of years. Women have always been controlled by men. They have been told how to live. And in some cultures, they are still considered property. One of the countries I lived in was Saudi Arabia. So I have seen it firsthand, how people live in those countries. And it was very painful for me to see this. So 2 years ago during lockdown, I also sat with myself a lot. And I decided that it was time to do something that has to do with my life's purpose, which is to help others awaken to their true reality and not just go along with whatever. So I decided to quit my human resources job at the time and to launch Phoenix on the Rise. It was not an easy decision to make, but it felt like the right time, because I thought, if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? There's also other things that have happened. I've had some visions about things that have also mystical visions that have been part of my journey that also encouraged me in this path. And that's why it continues to be. I'm not sure if you're aware. Do you remember the Supreme Court judge, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, RBG? Mm-hmm. Right. So she's like a huge role model for me, because she mm-hmm. championed women's rights in law in the 1970s. Even in the 1970s, all lawmakers were male, white, old men who had absolutely no idea about what was going on in women's world. And she championed the rights of women and was successful in changing legislature. And so, you know, her example is just incredible. I wrote a blog post about that last year, where I talk about the divine feminine energy rising again in the world, because it has been suppressed for so long. So it's time it comes up, so that we can have an equal place at the playing table with men, right? This is what I'm all about. It's about equality. We don't have to be the same, but we have complementary things we can bring, so that we can create a different world, because this world is not working, is it?
A question as a man I've often thought about. Are women of the world brainwashed? I'm asking that question because I do not understand how almost everything around us is female, is creation, is collaboration. How did the tables turn? And that's one of the world, but I would say that's the number one world's biggest propaganda and brainwash, that women
absolutely
either most of I would think most of women in the world feel second or less than men still. Like, yeah. It's beyond my even as a kid, I was just like, what?
Yes.
Women birth men. Like, the universe is female energy. So what gives?
Absolutely.
So have you thought about that? Can you
give women are still paid less than men in every country in the world except Iceland, which just recently introduced legislation that does not allow women to be paid less. So think about what that means. Is the value of women is seen as less than, but that is definitely deep conditioning and propaganda. And I believe that comes from religion, because most religions view women, you know, at the bottom of the pile, the man is the head, blah, blah, blah. I remember saying to my mom, I don't need a head. I got one already. Thanks. right? I mean, what would I need that for? Now, Eastern religions don't have that, because Eastern religions, I look at Buddhism and practices like that as practices. They're not really religions with dogmas. So they don't have that. They talk about people. They talk about humans.
Yes.
But in patriarchal religions like Christianity and Judaism and Islam, which are, of course, connected, and all of their spin-offs, all of the fundamentalists, women are not to be valued as much. And goodness forbid when they're on monthly cycle, I mean, then they're unclean.
Mm-hmm.
What? You know, like making these normal human bodily processes, making them into something unclean. This is all nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, a lot of women, unfortunately, have been brainwashed to believe that they're not as good as, and they shouldn't reach for more. And they need just to find a husband and have kids and have that life, mm-hmm. even if they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
There are still cultures, even Western cultures, where a single unmarried woman who has never had children or a husband does not have a place in that society, except to look after an elderly person. But as their own being, they're not seen to have value. Isn't that strange?
That's why it's propaganda and it's brainwashed, because...
Yes, definitely.
I'm not saying, I cannot say that I know how it feels when that's happening, but somehow, even with my own traumas, like sometimes we do things in uniformly, even subconsciously we know it's wrong, but we still go along with stuff because we're surviving. As you mentioned, you want people to thrive and not just to survive, and coping. And it needs to stop already. Like,
I agree.
Even a human thing, even it needs to stop, because as of 2020, it's going to be February and we'll see how long I last, but I am done playing the rat race. I am done kissing boots to the employer. And it's like, I'm not going to go through deep into that, but I refuse to take the vaccine because I feel like it's a trade, my body, to get employment. And I'm like, mm-hmm. no, this is going too far. If I want to take the vaccine for myself to do whatever, fine. But to trade it for work and to advance in the ladder and all this stuff. And where was I in that ladder? Step 2 or 3 anyway, prior to COVID. So therefore, you know what? I don't want it. I'm done playing the rat race. And I've been very blessed and grateful to still doing what I do and have roof over my head. And it's winter and I'm warm and I'm eating well. So we'll see. But yes, definitely. And this is why your work is very important, which the second question I was going to ask you, why is your work important? But I feel the importance of it, because a lot of people, I've noticed even on YouTube, talking about, oh, those things are myth and they don't exist. Or when it's like race relations or women's rights, oh, those things are myth, but you can see who's saying those things. It's usually,
I was going to say, who says those things?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah,
right?
Like if a white man is talking about race, and I was like, I think your position is to listen to the person saying the other stuff. Or if it's a man, period, talking about women issues, your place is just to listen to the other side. Your place is not really to, you can state your opinion so people can know where you stand, but your presence is to, if you're willing, and it'll be for your own well-being, to basically listen and be there and have a conversation so you can grow and change your mindset, not because people want you to, like, beating down on you, but like as a growth person you need to grow. So
but you know, Zen, a lot of people don't want to change their mindset because they're comfortable in their mindset.
And it works for them
if
too.
They're at the top, right?
Yep.
Why would I give women the same rights? Because then they might become a real competitor to me. So I think they're okay where they are. It's all really exaggerated, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the narrative. And there are many narratives are out there. You've seen The Matrix, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we are highly programmable beings in this human form. And yes, we are. And we are programmed, as I said, since infancy to believe certain things. And sometimes the mothers are the worst programmers of their daughters.
I was going to say that because I watched some old, I love watching old movies. And of course, a movie, but it's made by human. And I was watching, I was like, wait a minute. The women are teaching their sons because that's how I kept going, sadly, because of the program. Yes.
Did you see that meme that there's writing on the wall that says protect your daughters and somebody scratched it out?
Yes.
And educate your sons, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. You shouldn't have to protect your daughters, because if your sons were more educated and lived from the heart, mm-hmm. it would be a whole different world. You would have to protect your daughters. Right. So this is what I'm saying about the system not working, because the way it is right now, it is creating a lot of separation between different types of people, right? Mm-hmm. Age, gender, race, ethnicity, language, sexual orientation, you name it, right? Mm-hmm. So our job, is, as far as I see it, is to come together collectively and collaboratively to change all that. Yeah. And I think you start doing it one person at a time. If people can transform their thinking, if they can transcend that programming, become aware of it, wake up to it, and then do something about it, then you have actually made a change in the world, which does reverberate. It's like when you throw a stone in the pond, right?
Mm-hmm. And when you mention the competition, I'm not a competitive person, and I've often felt like it was a nasty thing. I love the arts. And when I do the arts, people will be like, oh, this is how you can do to improve and you can go beyond this person, whatever. I was like, I can improve with myself if I feel like improvement.
Personal best,
I don't need to
right?
do it for, yeah, I don't need to do it for someone else. Actually, someone got mad at me for some reason. I was like, okay, why are you mad at me about what I want? He's like, because I also sing, but I sing based on like poetry, and I want to sing it and have my work out there. And I'm like, thank you for all your feedback. I appreciate it, unsolicited. But like, I'm just doing this for fun. Can I just do this for fun without competition or bring it out there and have to show and get improvement? No, like Dr. Wayne Dyer says, like, don't let your music die within you. I just want to have my music and sing it. And if no one's hearing it, fine. Like, if a man speaks in a forest, can we still hear him, kind of a thing? Like, I can be in the forest and I don't need to be seen with a selfie. I'm in the forest. Like, I just want to live.
Yeah. And that's a beautiful way to be. I mean, if we were all like that, imagine how different the world would be. And this whole idea of competition and the rat race and the whole idea of lack, these are beliefs and programs introduced to the collective consciousness for control purposes, right?
And
this
it's
is
bondage.
How we are being controlled. It is bondage.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you, 2020. I'm done.
Right?
Yeah. I'm so grateful. So as I was reading in your website, you mentioned transformational work. What is that?
So transformational work is basically what we've been talking about. So you know that there's something that's not quite working in your life. So often for women, it is this whole feeling of not being able to be who they truly are, but it's not even articulated like that. There's just something missing. Often these women are in a transition phase. So they're transitioning from one thing to another, or they're ready to transition. It could be a breakup of a marriage. It could be relocation. It could be a new job. It could be many different things. Or sometimes it's not a transition phase, but there's something that they feel is missing, but they don't know how to put their finger on it. They don't quite know how to identify it, right? And often it comes back to that really negative programming we spoke about. This is what's really holding them back. They just haven't identified it. So once they become aware and they step back and they begin to work on themselves, right? Inner work, it all starts from inside and it cascades on the outside. Then they begin to transform. So they transform from the inside, how they see themselves, what they believe about themselves, what they believe about their abilities and capabilities and who they are. And they begin to present themselves differently. this is transformation. You were this, you were transforming to this. And this is why I called my company Phoenix on the Rise, because the Phoenix, as you know, is a symbol of rebirth, right? It burns itself to the ashes and comes out a different, better, improved, more powerful bird. And so for me, the symbol really spoke very strongly. And I know women who have reinvented themselves in this way. And I've done it myself more than once. And it's not an easy process by all means. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of determination and resilience. But when you come out on the other side and you see how far you've come, it's like night and day. And it's just fully, fully worth it.
Yeah, most certainly. It reminds me of words like burning yourself out or working. Yeah, burning yourself out or rock bottom. I thought of these words because at some point, which most of us, let's say if you do 9 to 5 or you're working the corporate ladder, you burn yourself out for a company who don't care about you, as a lot of us noticed prior
absolutely
in 2020. And because I interview a lot of people who had a lot of drug abuse, when they go to rock bottom, that's when it's like you go to rock bottom, you burn yourself out, then you rise. Those people, they tend to do so great things, and it's amazing. And basically, of course, we have like this freedom of choice and all this stuff, but there's like this, maybe, I don't know exactly, and I want to spend about it too much, but like maybe kind of like a fake thing where they went through all that and now they're doing so much great work. So it's as if their past was meant to be there for them to be there.
Absolutely.
And of course, some people don't go through anything. Like I haven't gone through all these turmoils and I'm doing mediocre work, but I'm still happy with it. I'm still fine. I have not gone like above and beyond and save everybody. Like Dr. Wayne Dyer, what he went through, he went through being a nasty person and hitting his dad and going through drugs and alcohol. And he's like this renowned leader and he's one of my gurus. So maybe if he was a mundane person, then he wouldn't be Dr. Wayne Dyer. So it's like...
Well, and what happens with that a lot of times is because you've gone through this process, you can see how you can help others go through a similar process. And so you use the lessons and you use the trauma you went through once you've healed it to help others heal their trauma. And there's also generational trauma, which I just want to address for a minute. And this is trauma that has happened from past generations that you carry in your DNA and you're not even aware of. And a lot of the times, that messaging exists from many, many past ancestors, who, especially in women's roles. You know, I mean, you know, for women, a lot of times it was just baby machines. And there are certain cultures where they are still regarded just as baby machines, not intelligent, self-aware and self-empowered beings. They're not seen like that at all. So, you know, my vision is to change that all over the world. Now, it's not going to happen in my lifetime, I don't believe. But I'd like to, you know, I'd like to be that part of that process, because the Dalai Lama said the world will be saved by the Western woman. Now, I don't know what he meant, but that is at the bottom of my my newsletter whenever I send it out, that quote.
You know, it makes sense because the Western woman, I feel, and as we know in history, as we're looking at it, is a leader in growth and change, because other women, as we looking at the world, because I feel like you're pretty worldly, not in the sense of Jehovah's Witness, but like you in the world noticing and saying things like that, as I am, that the Western women is the one who tend to be more outspoken and want to break the chains or even have the ability to, and et cetera. And living in the United States, some people complain, and I understand there's a space for complaint, definitely, because sometimes I'll have some complaint as well. However, when you're done complaining and venting, if you look at where you are,
absolutely,
hey, look at me, like, just based on history here. Like, I don't see myself like that, but the Western world will see me as, and based on history, I'm a dark-skinned person. And in 2022, and I'm grateful to be a millennial or being raised in this lifetime, whatever, like, I don't even see myself as those hindrances like the Western world see me as. I just see myself as a spiritual being in a body, whatever that body can be. Yes. And I'm a powerful being in my own space, and I can inspire and be powerful in other people's space if they let me be. So therefore, like, those little hindrances or the little boxes or things of like, you women, you're small, you're a Black person, you're small, and you know, all this stuff, I do not identify as those things at all. And as I mentioned, like, people feel threatened by that because I'm not fitting in their boxes. Exactly. Whatever. And exactly. I haven't, it's kind of sad, but not. And as I'm trying to look at the light, I have not held a job for 20 years. And I'm in the transitional space of like being okay with it. But in the beginning, I felt like it sucked. I felt sad. I felt down because I was like,
you didn't fit in.
Yeah. I was like, what is it about me? Because I have great credentials. My resume is fine. And people talk to me over the phone. They're excited to meet me. Once I get to the interview, we haven't even said good morning. I know the interview is over and all this stuff, and had to basically accept it and be okay with it in 20 years. Like, and I know, like, I'll have credentials about something and someone have nothing and they get the job. And of course I'm happy for them, but as a human being, it also before my spiritual process, I couldn't help to have either jealousy or resentment or those thoughts of like, why does that person have it? Is it racism? Yes. Is it all this stuff? And as my guru says, there's all these questions or these terminals because you're identified with our body. We're identified with the human materialistic world. So the more I don't identify as those things, the more I'm free because I haven't worked literally for 2 years. And I'm grateful that I'm still, I wouldn't say I'm thriving now, but I'm surviving. And
yeah,
I don't have a sense of lack. And prior 2020, I want a career and I want those things people have. And I work my butt off. I sometimes work 70 hours, but doing different random things because I want a career. And the man or whoever refused to give me that. But as we mentioned with the fate or how the universe worked, maybe it was part of fate because I know I'm an entrepreneur. I know I'm a one-man show usually. And maybe that was like shaping me to be where I'm at. So
exactly.
As 2020 happening, I'm being more grateful and accepting of that because as a man, like in the world, it's like, it sucks not to have a career for 20 years. Like I'll feel like being honest in the past, I feel like a loser. Like who am I? But since I stopped identifying with a job, my spirit doesn't need to be a somebody to have a 9-to-5 or making 6 figures and all this stuff. All these things, I don't care about them anymore as of 2020, 100%.
I'm with you on that. I mean, you know, I mentioned to you about my spiritual belief system, and it's exactly the same. We are spirit beings having a human experience. This is not, we don't identify with the body. We don't identify with the circumstances. This is all just virtual game, a 3D virtual game we come into.
Right?
We just forget these are roles, but this is not our true essence. Our true essence is spirit that goes back and does this many, many times in different places, different planets, different dimensions. It's, you know, it's a very different cosmology than we were taught. Mm-hmm. And I am so grateful that it is.
Yes, most certainly. And I don't know about, and I've heard a lot of my spiritual teachers talk about with karma and like having a life after this. And as my Guru, Sadhguru says, talk about things or know things that you experience. I'm like, you know, all these things they talk about, I don't even doubt it could be true or not, but I don't even care to even like know more or sip into it because it's not my current experience. Like I'm living in the present now. Like if I reincarnate to be whatever, like that's in the future. So it's none of my business. It's like, I'm just going to do my best now kind of a thing. And right. So I know why your work is important and you know that too, but tell the audience, why is your work so important?
Well, as I said before, I think my full vision is to really change the world. And I think that the reason Western women have such power is because we have the money, we have the education, and we have the choices that most women in the world do not. So I feel that it is up to us to kind of be in the front of that wave and to make the difference that we can, certainly starting from our own Western world, because there are lots of women, even in developed countries, who still have minimizing messages about themselves. Mm-hmm. So that needs to start to shift so that, you know, it starts from within. So we start working with one person at a time that's nearby, because I'm not going to be able to do this work with somebody in India or somebody in Pakistan or somebody in a country that's really, really oppressed. I have to work with women who have the ideas of the possibilities that they have and to see those as opportunities for themselves, not just for someone else out there. So awakening them to their true potential and also to the whole reality of this is not who we are. We're just not our bodies and things like that. That also shifts your perspective somewhat. So
you become more powerful.
This is what, right? And once you leave that persona behind that you thought you were, and you mm-hmm. can, you know, you can create something different for yourself, you can see how far you've come. And many of these women want to help others on the same path. So it becomes that stone in the pond that starts the ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And the more people do this, of course, the ripple effect is greater. This is why I think it's so important for everyone to empower themselves, and not just women, of course. I focus on women because, as we said, they have been oppressed for so many centuries. And there is untapped potential in there that is just incredible. Just incredible. That's my personal belief.
Mm-hmm. And definitely when you mentioned about mindset, I couldn't help to think one thing that's core in growing up. I grew up, I was born in IT and I grew up there for the first 10 years. And although I was Jehovah's Witness, but one thing that culture teaches from what I learned is the difference between the slaves there and the slaves in the United States is the slaves there, they're the first ones who revolt in the Western hemisphere because they were like, if we don't do, we're going to do this for ourselves if we survive. And if we don't survive, at least we're doing it for our children. And if those don't survive, at least the slave owner will have nothing. So therefore, in a sense, they don't identify with, I'm just at the bottom, I'm just going to be a slave. I'm going to do my best to fight this. And if I die, then so be it. And so with that mentality, that change, then they were able to free themselves. Of course, they got in different bondage of like the three Western world powers when they find that out, they were going to go back. So instead they exchanged money for their freedom and, you know, survive, who got to do what they got to do. And so I thought of that because of the mindset. Once you change your mindset, you become so powerful and nothing anyone can do or say can move your position anymore, because once you know your power, because once they knew their power, they are able to have that ripple effect, as you mentioned.
Which is what Viktor Frankl said, right?
Yeah.
In his book about his experience at Auschwitz. Yeah, exactly the same thing in a different context.
Most certainly. And the women did that. And me knowing women history in the United States, they did that. They had, I saw certain things like where women, of course, women were marching and women were, let's say if they were starting wearing pants or voicing their voice, and they had the, what's that thing called when you stop eating? Like some of the women, they were like a hunger strike. They were doing some strikes, et cetera, or speaking out. And those things take courage. And same with the slaves in Haiti. they were doing it, even if they could perish at that time. Some probably were even mentally perish, because that's possible. At least they were doing it for women like you now, and women younger than you now, like for the future generation. So which brings me to the next point that I like to say, especially in 2020, when we saw, at least in the United States, when all these things were happening with protests and when women's march, that like the world, if we do things not selflessly just for ourselves, if we do it for the next generation, then there is transformation, there is change. Because if we just do things for ourselves, it becomes more selfish, like the rat race or the competition. Those are doing for ourselves, which don't transform anything. It's just stagnant. And we just grasp and keeping for ourselves, like there's lack.
Yep.
But if we do it for others, there's no lack, because we're giving. Or
and there's vision. You have a vision, yes. Right? Long-term vision that pulls you out of your ego self that's always wanting more and more and more. And you start to have a very different view of the world and your space in it, you know, your place of service to others. And I just want to point this out. Service to others does not mean you don't take care of yourself. It doesn't mean you're a martyr. It just means that you know you have a greater purpose outside of just your everyday daily reality about survival, you know, going to work, having a job, having kids, having a house, and all of that stuff that we've been told is what we need to do. This is having vision beyond that, and seeing that you, every single one of us, has an ability to contribute to the vision of a better world. And it does take courage. And as you said, some people sacrifice their lives. And to be honest with you, Zen, some things are worth sacrificing this life for.
Yes, especially when you're here temporarily anyway and you're not your body. So therefore your spirit lives on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we know many who have sacrificed themselves to bring about greater changes for the world.
Yes.
And, you know, those are, you know, personal choices. Of course, not everyone is asked to make those choices, but you can see how some of those choices are hugely empowering, and people have made that decision. This is worth fighting for to the death.
Yes.
And yes,